This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
The other big thing for me is sleeping. I love sleeping and I need sleep.
During insomnia, the brain acquires the fear of not sleeping.
If you're really only getting 1 hour sleep a night, that's exhausting and affecting your physical and emotional.
The clocks go forward on Sunday. Not a stress for many of us, but for those suffering with poor sleep, it's yet another potential obstacle to a good night's rest. Something sleep consultant and CEO of the sleep care company, Anne-Marie Boyan, knows all too well.
I suffered from huge sleep deprivation and insomnia. As I was trying to make myself better, I ended up exiting my corporate career and going back to study sleep science.
And a good night's sleep is not just the best way to recharge our batteries, it's vital for our brains, function and development.
All the sleep hormones kick in. So your melatonin kicks in, which is our sleep hormone, which helps us sleep. Then you also have the human growth hormone, helps repair collagen with our bone density, repair our immune system, help with our consolidation of memories.
This is in the news from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, the four kinds of sleepers. Which one are you? Anne-Marie, I think it's fair to say that we're obsessed with sleep. You know, every day there's a new study. Just today in the papers, I read the results of two new studies. One said two nights of broken sleep can make people feel years older. I think it said something like 10 years older. I don't know how you measure that. But anyway, and the other that exercise can help with insomnia, which seems fairly stating the obvious. But anyway, how did you become interested and indeed make your career in the complicated world of sleep?
A good question. And I got into sleep through my own sleep struggles. I suffered from huge sleep deprivation and insomnia. I had to try and figure out what was causing it. So a number of things were causing it. But I essentially, as I was trying to make myself better, I thought there must be a lot of other people suffering from this. And I ended up exiting my corporate career and going back to study sleep science, to be a sleep science coach, to be a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, and now have the sleep care company, which I dedicate to helping people sleep.
Now, another study, it found that there are four different types of sleepers. One, good sleeper. Two, nappers. Three, catch-up weekend sleepers. And then insomniacs. So could we talk about that first? Good sleepers. What is a good night's sleep?
It is the golden ticket, what is considered a good night's sleep, if you feel well rested when you get up the next day. So that for different people means different things. The National Sleep Foundation say that on average, adults need 8 hours sleep. However, that is based on about 16% of the population. The rest of the population will vary between 7 and 9 hours sleep. So it's quite nuanced. For some people, they'll be good on 7 hours. For some people, it'll be 8. And for some people, they will need more. So it will be 9 hours sleep.
So what is your brain doing while you're asleep?
So the brain is crucial for sleep. And the brain's lymphatic system was only discovered by sleep scientists 14 years ago. So during the night, our brain is supposed to clean down all our cells, and that's draining the lymphatic system. So if you don't sleep during the night, none of that drainage happens. So as a result, the next day you would wake up feeling groggy, really like you have a hangover, even though you haven't had any alcohol. Also during the night, all the sleep hormones kick in. So your melatonin kicks in, which is our sleep hormone, which helps us sleep. Then you also have the human growth hormone, which kicks in from about 10:30 till 12. And that helps us do a number of things. So it does helps with the brain's cleaning, as I mentioned. It also helps repair collagen with our bone density, repair our immune system, do things like help with our consolidation of memories. So a lot of things happen during the night and our brain is quite crucial to that.
And what do you think of sleep trackers? You know, your smartwatch, your Fitbit and the rest. Do you think they're helpful or do they just make you more anxious?
For some people, they do make them more anxious. So I would have type A type clients who are used to excelling and improving and they would obsess over sleep data. And I don't think that's a good thing. I would use them only at the beginning and at the end of working with people. So, for example, getting a baseline of what their sleep is and then measuring it at the end as well. But for some people who want to optimize their sleep, so they're sleeping fine, but they want to optimize it, let's say, for better performance at work or better performance as an athlete, in that case, yes, sleep tracking would be quite crucial.
Now, I know my own sleep changed when I had children. I'm not talking about getting up with babies and all that. I'm talking about becoming a light sleeper, as if, you know, the body was on some sort of subliminal red alert at all times. You know, what has age and the stage you are in life got to do with your ability to sleep? I mean, I think we've all seen teenagers sleeping at noon as if they're dead and being jealous, you know. So what does age do?
Sleep affects us at different stages of our lives. So the teenagers in our lives do need a lot of sleep. So they would need about 10, 11, 12 hours sleep, as do babies need a lot of sleep. So the teenagers, their circadian rhythm is quite different to us as adults as well. So their getting up is equivalent to an adult getting up at 4 a.m. in the morning for a 6 a.m. start. So there is an argument for changing the school times to suit teenagers, because that is the situation with them. For us adults, 7 to 9 hours sleep, however, as we get older, that does change. So having children, like you mentioned, we are still programmed like we were when we lived in the cave. So, for example, the light sleep, we are alert to that tribe or that lion that's about to attack us. So that light sleep is so that we will hear that attack coming on. And when our bodies change like that, it's going to be susceptible so that it's light sleep, so that it perceives those threats. For women in particular, they do change going into their 40s and their 50s as well. So you have perimenopause and menopause. So there's a lot of hormonal changes that cause sleep issues. There's stress that causes sleep issues. So your cortisol that's rising in the night, for example, and a number of other things that cause it. And then as we get older, there is a myth that we should only be sleeping less, but I do believe that most people can get a good 7 hours sleep.
What hours during the night offer the biggest benefits for sleep?
Get to bed early. And when I say early, I mean between 10 and 10:30. So the body's heavy lifting happens between 10:30 and midnight. And that is when the human growth hormone kicks in. And that helps our melatonin production, which is our sleep hormone. But it does a lot of the things under the hood. So your collagen reproduction, all of your bone density, your immune function is all repaired. Your brain cells are cleaned down. So that's a crucial time. I would also say that between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. is quite crucial. So between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., your liver does a lot of its detoxification. And some people that wake up religiously between those hours, it could point to an issue with their liver. So there's a lot of good stuff that happens when we sleep during those hours. So I would advocate for early to bed and being asleep by 10:30 if you can.
Okay, can we talk about nappers now? I mean, the sort of the notion of being able to have a bit of a nap in the afternoon is a luxury that I think most of us don't have. But are all naps the same?
They're not. So I put them into two classifications. So one is a power nap and one is a longer nap. So a power nap is something that's up to 30 minutes. Have it earlier in the day, so not after 3 o'clock. There's been studies to show that having a nap can improve your energy and your cognitive function for up to 4 hours after your nap. NASA have done studies on this on their staff and pilots, and they reckon that 26 minutes is sufficient for a power nap. Then you look at a longer nap, which is 90 minutes. So that's when you really need to recover from sleep. So you might have had bad night's sleep for a few nights, or you're just really in need of that restoration. And the reason I say 90 minutes is because you go through a full sleep cycle in 90 minutes. So you go through the 4 stages of sleep between NREM sleep and REM sleep. So you're going to be fully restored after 90 minutes. However, we can't all afford 90 minutes in the day, so it isn't possible for everyone.
How does having a nap, though, in the middle of the day, how does that impact on your sleep then at night?
You should have a gap of between 8 hours between your nap and your sleep at night. So what happens is you need to build up your sleep drive. So your sleep drive, the more sleep drive you have, the more tired you're going to be. So that's why I mentioned having your nap, that it's ideally short, and having it earlier in the day. But if you look at other societies that do really embrace naps, you look at, let's say, the Spanish or the Italian populations, and they have naps. You look then to Asia and the Japanese, and even in Taiwan, it's part of their culture to have naps. Now, they do have a manic culture in terms of their work culture is very long hours, so they do actually need those naps. But it is very customary to be in an office and at lunchtime for them to turn off the lights and everybody puts their head onto their desk and has a nap.
Coming up, I continue my conversation with Anne-Marie Boyhan after this short break.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
We'll talk about the third category now. That's weekend catch-up sleepers. And this is the idea that, you know, you're getting less hours sleep during the week for whatever reason, work, whatever stresses, whatever. And then it's the weekend and there's a chance to catch up and enjoy a lie-in. Is that a good idea?
It is and it isn't. So there's schools of thought in favour and against. So if you lie in at the weekend, it does disrupt your circadian rhythm. So some people say, stick to the same schedule, the same sleep schedule as you have during the week, as you do on the weekend. However, I recognize that people have lives and are doing all sorts of things. So if you feel that you need catch-up sleep, then that's where you employ some strategies. I would put the lie-in on the weekend, probably towards the end of the heap, but there are things you can do to catch up. So that could be going to bed earlier, sleeping in, or having a nap, or having an extra long night in. As I say, it's less preferable to do the lie-in because it does move your circadian rhythm, but sometimes it's necessary.
And, you know, you talk about catch-up sleep. So presumably that's got to do with sleep debt. You know, how is that calculated?
The sleep debt is when you're lacking in sleep. So if you look at how many hours of sleep you have on a weeknight, and write that down. So that's A. And then if you look at how much sleep you need to feel really well rested during the day, and that's your B answer. And then your sleep debt is calculated by 5 times your A answer less 5 times your B answer. And we want that to be as close to zero as possible. So there's a saying that debt zero is equal to sleep hero. But many people are not at zero. So they might be at 1 or 2 or 5 or 6, which is actually okay. But we're trying to get it to zero as possible. So it's about trying to get as much sleep as your body needs.
And can you tell me how alcohol impacts on sleep quality? A lot of people would think, oh, I'll have a glass of wine in the evening, that'll help me sleep. But how does alcohol impact on sleep quality?
Alcohol impacts hugely on sleep quality. And a lot of us are guilty of thinking of a glass of wine as a de-stressor. But in actual fact, it does the opposite. So I see it with my clients at the sleep care company. If they have alcohol, basically I monitor them with an ECG monitor. And although they feel they've slept through the night and they have closed their eyes, you can actually see the data. When they fall asleep, you can see that their body has not had any rest and digest at all during the night. You can see it's super stressed. The more alcohol they have, that indicates to me that it is a super stressor. Alcohol induces inflammation. So inflammation, I know, causes insomnia. And then there are certain drinks that are going to dehydrate you because of the sugar that's in them. So wine is one of them. The sugar in it can cause your blood sugar to drop and then you wake up during the night. What I do say to people is, and especially women in their 40s and 50s, they find that they can't metabolize alcohol anymore. And it's like a bomb going off. You know, they're awake from 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. So what I do say to people is, if you do have alcohol, know that you're not going to get a good night's sleep.
Okay, the fourth category is insomnia. And I feel this is quite different because to me, insomnia is a real medical issue. What actually constitutes insomnia?
Insomnia is when you can't fall asleep or when you're awake during the night or when you don't feel rested and it has gone on for more than 2 months.
And what impact does insomnia have on the brain?
I would nearly class it as a chronic illness. You're going to have weak concentration, memory recall. Your performance is through the floor. So you're going to be feeling groggy. It can lead to depression, anxiety. You've no accuracy. You've huge risk of injury. It affects us in so many ways, but definitely mentally, physically. And then long term, it is going to affect our health. So our metabolic fitness, our appetite, our weight. It is really so hard for someone with insomnia to feel like they have any good quality of life.
Through the course of your work, seeing clients, have you found that more, I don't know, women than men present with insomnia? Is there a specific age group? Are there people who suffer from insomnia more than others?
Insomnia doesn't differentiate. So, you know, in adults, I'm talking about. So I have, for example, a 30-year-old electrician who has insomnia. They haven't been sleeping well for weeks. They've low sex drive. They're feeling depressed. They are retracting socially. So they don't want to see people, talk to people. Their mood, their relationships are affected. Their work is affected. They might be feeling super stressed because they don't want to show at work that they're lagging behind, or they don't want their colleagues to know how it's affecting them in so many ways.
At the start, I mentioned, Anne-Marie, a study that found that if you're fit, that can help with insomnia, which seems pretty basic finding to me. But anyway, what do you think of that?
Definitely insomnia is caused by an underlying health issue that you may not know about. It could be a mental trauma that you're going through or a life episode that you're going through. It could be something physically that's going on in your body that you don't know about. So with your gut, with your minerals, with your neurotransmitters, with your hormones, with your circadian rhythm. But I do see people who think and feel that they're healthy or fit who get insomnia. So that particular person was very fit, going to the gym, running every day. So I think it can affect anyone. I would say about exercise that people with insomnia, they actually can't physically exercise heavily into the evening. And in general, people who want a good night's sleep, you shouldn't do heavy exercise within 3 hours of sleeping because it raises our body temperature. And also, I think exercise is really good. You know, do your exercise early in the day if you can. It does make us more tired and it does help us sleep at night. But certainly if you are experiencing something like insomnia, you have to approach it differently.
Now, you just mentioned there not exercising within 3 hours of you going to bed. Over the last few years, we've been hearing a lot about sleep hygiene, became an expression, sleep hygiene. What do you make of that? And do you agree with that, that there are a set of sort of rules that everybody should adopt to help themselves or give themselves maybe the best possible chance of a good night's sleep?
Yeah, I certainly think sleep hygiene helps most of the population. It doesn't work for insomniacs. They have tried everything and still can't sleep. But for most of us, sleep hygiene is good. So it's a way of winding down and telling the brain that you're actually going to sleep. It's telling the brain, getting it prepared for the inactivity ahead. We do need to get into a habit of doing that. So switching off our phones an hour before bed and then doing something that a practice or a product that's calming for you. And that's different for everyone. So for me, it's turning off my phone at 9:30 at night. Then I'll have a herbal tea and then I will listen to a podcast or I'll read a book. For another person, it's totally different. They might do a meditation. They might do some breath work or some stretching. Someone else might light a candle and talk to their friend. So it's just about finding a small, even if it's 5 minutes, if it's 20 minutes, I don't believe in huge, arduous sleep rituals, but it's finding something that works for you, that switches your brain to say, this is my time to calm down. This is my time to get ready for sleep and try and get into that nice, rested, calm mode.
Thanks very much, Anne-Marie. That's it for today. For more reporting on a range of health issues, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode was produced by John Casey. In the news, we'll be back on Monday.